Welcome to a very special episode of the Ben Greenfield Fitness Show, recorded straight from Kauai, Hawaii, where I was able to spend a great deal of time with professional surfer Laird Hamilton and his wife, professional volleyball player Gabby Reese. We sat down at Laird and Gabby's home and recorded an epic episode for you in which we discuss everything from anti-aging to homeschooling to underwater workouts to biohacks, pooping, and oh, so much more. This one's going to be a real treat for you. The audio may sound a little bit different because I'm traveling with my portable microphone setup, but nonetheless, I guarantee you will love this episode.
Well, if you're like me, you live a busy life. You don't really have time for many days off. That's why I talk so much about your mitochondria, because they generate about 90% of the energy your body uses, and keeping your mitochondria strong, it's one of the best ways to keep fatigue at bay. But these little mitochondria, darn things, are expensive to run. They use a huge amount of raw materials, especially when it comes to minerals. The problem is most people, including you and me, probably don't get enough minerals. And without minerals, your mitochondria don't have the cofactors they need to make energy. More than 97% of Americans don't get enough potassium. About 80% are deficient in magnesium. 40% are deficient in calcium. And those are three of the big ones. There's close to a dozen other trace minerals that are important for mitochondrial function, and most of us don't get enough of them, and you definitely can't get them from, say, table salt. It turns out that trying to take all the minerals you need by taking single mineral supplements isn't only hard because you need a ton of pills, but it's not the most effective way to get your minerals. That's why I take liquid, humic, and fulvic complexes. These are full-spectrum mineral supplements, which means you get all the essential minerals your body needs in one go without a daily handful of massive amounts of pills or very large capsules or anything else that's hard to swallow. I use Beam mineral supplements because they're almost 100% bioavailable. They come in a liquid form that's easy to drink. It's just two bottles. I keep them in my pantry, throw back a shot a few times a day. They're a great way to refill your mineral stores, especially for those of you out here who are haunting your sauna on a frequent basis, or sweating, or doing hot yoga, or anything else. Keep your mitochondria running strong. So if you want to up your mineral game, give Beam Minerals a try. Go to Beam Minerals, B-E-A-M, minerals.com, and use code BEN at checkout for 20% off your first order. Well, if you're tired of spending hours on cardio with minimal results, then listen up, because I got a game-changing fitness breakthrough for you. The Carol Bike, science-backed, time-saving solution trusted by experts for optimizing health and longevity. They use this special form of a workout called a rehit, which allows you to achieve superior health and fitness benefits compared to regular cardio in 90% less time. That's amazing. That's a lot of time, 90%. Studies show that by doing Carol's 5-minute workout just three times a week, you can improve your fitness by 12%, reduce your risk of type 2 diabetes by 62%, and even wind back your internal body clock by 10 years. The science is clear. Carol Bike is your ticket to a healthier and more vibrant life. You got to try it to believe it and to see what I'm saying. I mean, it's not like a walk in the park. When you're pushing hard in those intervals, you're pushing, but then it's just like over and it's done and it walks you through it. It's very motivating. It's 5 feet away from me right now. It's right here in my office, my cool little exercise toy in my office. So you get $250 off your Carol Bike. You don't have to wait any longer. You can join over 25,000 riders and visit carolbike.com today. Carolbike.com. I get laughed at, maybe because it's a little bit woo-woo, esoteric, invisible, whatever, but I use quantum energy. I pray over my food when I eat. I try and emanate positive emotions and feelings towards people. I do like little breath work and Tibetan longevity exercise moves to charge up my body with invisible energy. And yes, I even blast my home and my body with certain quantum energy products like necklaces and little boxes that I can use to charge up food. And I get this all from this company called Lila Q. Now, I realize that some quantum energy stuff is not provable by science, but Lila does have third-party studies revealing a remarkable 20 to 30% increase in ATP production, a vital process for cells. Quantum energy has over 59 studies already done and counting. These are randomized double-blind studies these folks are doing for blood quality and HRV optimization. I can't explain it, okay? I'm not going to sit here and pretend like I can explain how quantum energy would increase blood energy or blood quality. Could be placebo. I don't know. But all I can tell you is I wear their necklace. I use their products. I blast my home with their energy. And it's called Lila Q. I've got a podcast with them, a few, if you want to take a deeper dive. But you just go to the website. Check it out. It's kind of fun to surf around. And you know what? If anything, you're going to have some cool-looking conversation products at your house and hanging around your neck. I love them. LeelaQ, LeelaQ.com. Use code Ben10 for 10% off. LeelaQ.com. Use code Ben10 for 10% off.
In this episode of the Ben Greenfield Fitness Show.
Of course, as you get older, I always say my injuries have made me pay more attention. If everything's fine and you're just going along, you aren't paying attention because you don't need to. So I think age and injuries and time sort of bring certain things to your awareness.
When I wasn't getting food that had enough nutrition, I was eating a lot more. As I get food that's more nutritious, right, and I have better quality food or been getting the things I need, I'm getting the fats that are feeding my brain, I'm not just devouring stuff like I was, you know, 20 years ago.
He's an expert in human performance and nutrition. Voted America's top personal trainer and one of the globe's most influential people in health and fitness. His show provides you with everything you need to optimize physical and mental performance. He is Ben Greenfield.
Power. Speed. Mobility. Balance. Whatever it is for you, that's the natural movement. Get out there. When you look at all the studies done, studies that have shown the greatest efficacy.
All the information you need in one place, right here, right now, on the Ben Greenfield Fitness Podcast.
See that white water break in there?
Yeah, I see the white water break.
That's there's 10 guys in the water.
Amazing. Yeah.
And you're, looking at Ben Stiller's house straight above it. See that? House right above it in the trees.
Amazing view. You know, I've spent most of my time in Kona.
Look,
and we are recording, by the way.
Oh.
look through your Bushnell.
But
can you see the guys
now.
Surfing?
You can just sit up here with your binos and
check
and stock people surfing.
That's a must for Laird.
Do you see the guys on the wave?
Is anyone on one now?
I don't see them.
Down here further on they're catching them and they're riding them right down low.
Oh yeah.
Down
low.
There's one guy's on
there.
See him?
Yep. Yeah. It's like hunting surfers, little spot and stock. So why do you guys live in Kauai? Why here? What's the story?
Well, I grew up here, so that's our best excuse, I would think, is I was raised here, and so I felt a natural kind of comfort to be here, especially, you know, with my family and exposing the girls to the environment that I got to be in and then just all the people that I got to be around too. Mm-hmm. So it just seems to be, and I somehow convinced Gabby that she'd like it too.
Had you been here before, Gabby?
We lived here in the mid 90s when we were only Isabella, our oldest daughter, was born. And
we were newlyweds.
Yeah. Cause they say Kauai, you know, nearly dead or newlywed, but I think it was a little premature at that time for us to live here. I don't think we were ready, or I wasn't ready. And I grew up in the Caribbean. I grew up on an island, but I just wasn't ready. And so we lived on Maui for many years, and we live on the mainland half the year.
Uh-huh.
And I think after our other two daughters were born, and just kind of as you go through life a little bit, also wanting the contrast for the girls, mm-hmm. you know, the notion of what we say.
How many girls?
We have three daughters. One's at university and two are at home. Uh-huh. And, you know, the idea of this, be grounded in your life, be really grounded, but then go in the world and it's a big world and you can dream to be anything.
Yeah.
And so I think Kauai really provides a really grounding effect on all of us. And then it's the idea of, okay, then we take them into the world and say, okay, it's
right.
However you want to do it.
Right. Kauai seems different. Since I've been here, there's been a lot of people talking about like psychotics, like psilocybin, and people doing, you know, lots of marijuana. Like, is that something that's pretty pervasive here? Is that,
I mean, like, listen,
like
when we grew up,
tapping into the power of nature via the use of plant medicine? Because it seems like a very sexy topic these days, and people talk about it a lot here.
Well, I think a lot of it has to do with look at the environment. Mm-hmm. So the nature here is so alive, right? The tree, it's the wettest spot on Earth.
Mm-hmm.
And it's probably the most, the soil and the plant. I mean, things grow here. There's 10 mm-hmm. species of trees that are the biggest ones of the species here. The trees aren't from here. They brought trees here and they grew to be the biggest of that species. So the connection to nature is a big part of it. But, you know, when we grew up here as kids, I mean, we call it weed. That was mm-hmm. just like being in France and having grapes. It was like,
right.
It was just part of the world. Yeah. Everybody was, you know, and when you look at it, you go, okay, well, alcohol's killing people.
Mm-hmm.
You tell people to smoke weed if they have cancer so they can eat and sleep. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think our perspective about what certain things are, I mean, plants that do certain things for our body. Now there's abuse in every aspect and, you know, there's a time and place for everything, but you know, the grand architect provided us every single cure that there is in nature. So, you know, it's like my hip's been killing me lately and somebody made me this incredible, comfrey, like mm-hmm. fresh comfrey, like thing. And I've been putting it
almost
on
like a poultice.
I've been rubbing it on and it's had probably the most profound effect on my hip in the last few days, and I've had this whole season. Like, I've been doing everything to it. The only thing I've done different is put this comfrey on, and all of a sudden, wow, I was like, wow, my leg's feeling different. Mm-hmm. Like, it feels different. And so, you know, I think that that's a big part of it. You know, I think as a kid growing up here, you were a farmer. I mean, we grew up at a taro patch, which is like a rice paddy, and we planted taro and we were in the mud. And any tree you planted or anything you grew, it just exploded. Hmm. And that created a relationship with nature, right? So then you started to look for, okay, hey, this tree, this food. I mean, we just, you know, I say, Kauai, you get muddy here. We come here, you get muddy, the kids get muddy. And that gives you a better perspective on our existence, humans on Earth. Mm-hmm. Like, and then mm-hmm. you go and you can go out and see the world, like Gabby said, and you can have the lights and the action.
A level of boredom sometimes. Well, like a small town anywhere, you know, people can
feeling come. Of isolation here.
No, I mean, you know, the problem is if you don't have enough productive outlets, then it's like anywhere, it's going to swing around like a boomerang, and people are going to get engaged in things to entertain themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Well, idle hands are the devil's playground too. Yeah. I mean, when you get into, and we have a lot of hippies here.
Yeah.
We have a lot of peace.
Okay, case in point, within 10 minutes of arriving here, as I was looking at the view, a motorcycle pulled over on the highway and a lady walked up to me and held out a paper bag of weed and said, would you like to buy this? Are you the guy I'm supposed to be meeting here to buy this? Which is probably what she does to half the people who pull out and look over that cliff. I just thought it was interesting. And at the same time, there's such an intense connection with nature while being here. And I'm curious how that's influenced you guys in terms of your diets. Like, do you follow a specific diet? Is there like there's everything out there right now, from the bulletproof diet mm-hmm. to veganism to the paleo diet. I mean, are you guys into food being here, or do you follow a specific diet?
I think, it's interesting. Laird is more disciplined than I am. Mm-hmm. And I think, I don't know if it's the nature of he's male, I'm female.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think women sometimes will use food more as an emotional comfort or what have you. And I don't think we're indoctrinated into one way of eating paleo. If I said we were eating more one way, I would say it's a diet in a lot of healthy fats and probably mm-hmm. more paleo style.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, but we were eating paleo before paleo was a term.
Before paleo was a thing.
Yeah, before paleo was paleo, we were eating. I mean, you know, I would describe my personal diet is plants and animals. Like, mm-hmm. what do you eat? Plants and animals. Mm-hmm. Now, where those plants come from and what plants those are and where those animals come from, that really can be the difference. And, you know, we have farmers markets that we go to here, that we go to on the island that are incredible, that have, you know, farmers that are growing incredible stuff.
And homemade sauerkraut.
Yeah. I mean, then we have guys that we know that farm lamb and mm-hmm. that farm cows and that farm buffalo, and that, you know, I mean, they'll have friends that know how to fish that go out and, you know, catch fish from, you know, 600 feet down. And so, I mean, whenever we can get live stuff that's closer to nature, closer to its origin, that's always the best. Like if I had it my way, we would just always be like, okay, go to the farmer that's got that food. Get that papaya from the from the barn. Get the avocado. No, get the fish.
Have you paid more attention? I mean, you're both pro athletes, or you've been pro athletes, and now you're transitioning into older age. And has your diet shifted since then? In terms of the type of things that you go out of your way to do to take care of your bodies?
Sure. I don't know if it's the age or if it's just the education.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, you're always looking for things to help minimize the amount of inflammation or inflammatory mm-hmm. responses in your body. I think, let's say, if Laird's in his season versus he's in his off season, maybe his food changes based on his needs. If he's foiling for 6 hours a day, or if he's, you know, training for 4 hours a day. So I think it varies. And for me as well, I go with seasonally, even though we live in warm weather all the time,
mm-hmm.
I can feel like certain parts of the year, if I'm working more or what have you, more or less food, less animal protein, you know, those sort of slight adjustments. Larry's
right.
really cut way back on a lot of red meat, you know, mm-hmm. and if we do, I mean, did you get the gas station beef?
We heard about the world famous gas station beef and tried to get it.
And they delivered yesterday.
For my birthday.
Yeah.
So I think, yeah, sure. Of course, as you get older, I always say my injuries have made me pay more attention, because mm-hmm. if everything's fine and you're just going along, you aren't paying attention because you don't need to, because everything's fine.
Yeah.
And so I think age and injuries and time sort of bring certain things to your awareness. And even is it's not even just like, oh, how I feel physically. It's when you get to the point where you eat a food and you feel bummed out an hour later,
mm-hmm.
you start to connect that and go, you know, it just mm-hmm. wasn't worth it.
Yeah.
And I think, I mean, on my side, I want to talk about the education aspect of it, because there's people like you and other, you know, other people out there exposing information. We're getting a lot more knowledge now. We have the internet. We're getting a lot of information that's affecting the way we eat. And when I wasn't getting food that had enough nutrition, I was eating a lot more.
Mm-hmm.
But as I get food that's more nutritious, right, and I have better quality food, or but getting the things I need, I'm getting the fats that are feeding my brain. I'm not just devouring stuff like I was, you know, 20 years ago, because I was really just, I didn't really know, even though I ate well, because I was always exposed to good food, because we lived, you know, you live in the jungle, you're going to get good stuff. But the fact is, you were just consuming more out of the fact that you weren't getting the nutrients. And so your body's just like, hey, you know.
But we're not, but I wouldn't say we're neurotic. And like I said, Laird is more disciplined than I am. And I don't have big no's in the house for the kids, because I think that creates another issue later.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want anything to be off limits, so that the conversation is, dinner is prepared a certain way. Their lunches are a certain way. You expose them to, I always say, what's fun and what's food.
Mm-hmm.
And it's getting them to understand that. And then slowly as they get older, like our oldest daughter eats super clean.
Yeah. But she's making that choice too. And I think
you've educated her, she's making that choice.
Like
yeah.
we're leading by example.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
we're leading by, this is how we,
yeah.
now if you really want to have that pasta or that peanut butter and jelly sandwich or whatever, we'll have it. We'll provide it for you,
yeah.
because you're just going to sneak down the street. And if you go to your friend Joey's house, you're just going to be like drinking sodas and,
but we don't have soda. Like certain things I don't buy. Like there's no, you know, there's not gonna be Twinkies and soda in my house, but it's sort of that notion of believing that they will come to it on their own.
Yeah. And I was going to ask you about homeschooling later, but this seems like a perfect time to ask you a little bit about that, because you homeschooled all three of your children?
The younger two.
The
oldest one went to a really good Montessori school on Maui.
A Montessori.
She went to a prep school. 99% of the kids go to college, and it was a school in Maui, when 50% of the kids in public high school go to university mm-hmm. or even graduate.
Yeah.
So
why did you homeschool?
Well, when Laird and I first met, I was still competing, and so I needed to be in California sort of April through October, and his big wave season that he's still doing and participating in is sort of October through April, or late March. And so it just became an organic extension of our lives. And the other idea was, I read this book called Hold On To Your Children As Long As You Can.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea was that parents will be the only one who provide unconditional love for children. And so if you can have a greater influence and impact on them as long as you can, because they're coming age at 12 or 13, where their friends will begin to impact them and influence them more than you will, even if they're homeschooled, that they don't love them unconditionally. So there was this idea of, well, we first of all can maintain our lifestyle. We can live in these two places, which in the end is maybe a better education than you're going to a mainstream school. And then the other side of that was trying to get them to find their own voice as best that they can and, you know, call it like let the cement dry, so that when they do go in the world, they haven't been influenced as much by like, oh, what are you wearing and who are you hanging out with and why'd you have them at mm-hmm. lunch? Because as adults, right, all we're trying to do is figure out who are we, who am I, what makes me happy, who do I like, where do you know, what do I want to do? And so our girls, it's a real opportunity for them to, you try to peel that out as much as you can.
How do you pull that off without, say, relearning calculus and having to teach that to your child, or spending an inordinate amount of time sitting at the kitchen table?
Oh no, I'm going to admit it straight up. First of all, our kids are very stubborn.
Mm-hmm.
And they would not listen to us one second.
They don't anyway.
They have mm-hmm. they have school teachers.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We have a teacher here and a teacher in the mainland.
We hire mm-hmm. very intelligent women that are actually, one of them has a doctorate in teaching.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
And we hire them and they give a
three. And they come to your home.
Well,
in one case, we bring our kids to a class at the lady's house.
And where
she
kids
runs a
there.
Class with, a
with other
kids.
Children.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. With a couple kids, and then and in the situation in Malibu,
yeah.
we have a classroom at our house, and a couple kids will join our kids,
yeah.
but we have a teacher that comes there and that is in far far more intelligent than we are, and that also our kids fear a little bit,
yeah.
so mm-hmm. they have a certain respect for her, which allows her the ability to teach. And yeah. so it's.
Plus, I want to be the nurturer. I really admire.
You don't want the confusion between being the teacher and the nurturer? For your children? Is that awkward?
I think I've seen people, I know some people, women especially, that are the homeschool, they're the teacher, and they do it beautifully. I just don't think I'm hardwired that way. And quite frankly, and I could admit this freely, I think that I'm too selfish to be that person who could dedicate that much time to sitting at the table and like, okay, 3-4 hours a day, and then all the activities after. So I say that brutally honest, where while they're at school, either I'm working or taking care of training or doing something, so that when they're out, I run them to their activities, to tennis, to this. I don't have the wherewithal.
At the end, you know, we would be beginning teachers.
We'd be terrible.
We'd be beginners. I don't need a beginner teacher teaching my kids. Right. How about give me an expert?
A novice. And I was homeschooled K-12, and I got lucky because I was independently motivated. My parents would literally just shove a math book under the bedroom door, and I would go to it. And I do. And it didn't necessarily work out quite as well for my siblings, but for me, being an independent learner, it worked out. We homeschooled our kids for 2 years before realizing we did. And then we realized the same thing that you and Laird seem to realize, and that is it's hard to be both the teacher and the parent.
Well, it's almost
and
impossible.
Especially when other people can do such a better job than you.
Well, and if you have disobedient children, too. Like, you know how I have friends who their children by nature, they came out just sort of more obedient mm-hmm. and easygoing.
Mm-hmm.
Our children are wonderful.
Defiant.
Yeah. They're wonderful people. And I personally really enjoy them. But they are not naturally obedient and easygoing. Mm-hmm. They mm-hmm. are going to question every... I mean, it's going to be so unproductive. Because they're just...
Well, because you're going to get into a debate with them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
About things to do with them growing up and being a good person that have nothing to do with them learning how to read and write.
Exactly.
So there's what did you do with the boys?
Well, we found a very good private school for them.
Okay.
And there are still issues, I would say, with, you know, learning in a way, depending on how you look at it, that you need to be a sheep, a factory worker. You know, and that was the fear that... There would be peer pressure to fit into the crowd. Are you familiar with Seth Godin?
Yeah.
Yeah, so Seth Godin has this philosophy that if you can outsource your child's education to a good institution where they're learning valuable skills that, again, you don't want to relearn calculus or Spanish or teach that to your child because you might be a novice at that, your job begins when they walk in the door mm-hmm. from school. That, you know, and that's what I do. That's when I take my kids out and I teach them how to shoot the bow and how to make fire and how to sell things on Craigslist. And you know, so it's a combination of unschooling / homeschooling, but then also teaching them how to play well with others, because belabor the point too much.
Your job as a parent is to teach life skills.
And I still, from being homeschooled and not having grown up in a group situation, I still suck at playing well with others, right? Like, I have to be the leader and in a position of responsibility, or else I'm just not in the place I want to be. Well, maybe.
I think you would have been that way anyway. If you think about it, I think people are kind of, they take their place of what feels good and is natural to them. And now if you were shy and you couldn't communicate and couldn't speak to people, I'd say, okay, well, maybe you should have been pushed out more. Right. But if what you're saying is, hey, I like it when I'm in charge and it's hard for me to take always the opinions of others or what have you, I think that's quite a few people.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And I don't think homeschooling would promote that any more than if you went to school.
Yeah. And it depends on how you do it too, right? Some people do a very good job with homeschooling and some people live in the backwoods as prairie muffins and you know, the kids don't get exposed.
Right. So.
Yeah.
Well, you know, with that, we have the exact opposite problem because our kids are exposed to so many adults and so many people that that's not an issue of ours. It's they're introvert, you know, they're not going to be introverts. They're like, you know, they're going to go and have a conversation with you in the corner and it's going to be something that you,
but
you
I want to be really clear that we recognize that to do it and to do it the way we do is really a luxury.
It is difficult. Absolutely. I mean, there's the affordability aspect of having
what
a tutor.
Saying. So I don't want to be like, oh yeah, just homeschool and then get a teacher. Right. I understand time and money on both sides, because by the way, you know how long they're at school? 3 hours, maybe four. Yeah.
But also too, I can say, but on the other side of that, you can also say that when you look at it, there are intelligent people out there that cost just a little bit more than a babysitter.
Yeah,
you know, that can run programs and do homeschooling. So it's easy to say, well, this is a luxury and we're homeschooling. No, we're not sending them to Yale.
No.
We're right now we're homeschooling and we get you can find educated people that don't want an a bunch of money. They don't want a huge fee.
A perfect example of that is a guy named Ben Hewitt, who wrote a book called Unschooling. He's been on the podcast before. And his children literally grow up on a farm and, you know, they live on a relatively paltry budget and they homeschool their children and they don't necessarily outsource it to tutors, but they have a good curriculum and they make it affordable. And frankly, you know, I've met his kids and I'm impressed.
Right.
So yeah, there's many ways to do it. Now, Laird, you have a lot of toys. You have a lot of gadgets. You know, when we were in your garage the other day before we went paddleboarding, there was everything from some special cold thermogenesis pool that you'd figured out how to rig up to cold water, to a sauna, to your hydrofoils. What would you say are some of your most valuable practices from like a workout or recovery or what some people might call a biohacking standpoint when it comes to the things you do to keep your body put together to play the game that you play?
Well, I think the most simple is the heat and the ice. I mean, that's this. If you said I had one tool to use for recovery and even just longevity and mood, how about just put you in a good mood if you're not in a great mood? I would say the ice and the heat are the two. Those are the two, you know, simplest, most productive tools that I could get a hold of. That and maybe a good you know, body smashing, somebody to come in and put elbows and heels and smash it. But
what does a heat ice routine look like for you? Like how do you do that? Because some people will just take like a hot shower and then a cold shower, or just go sit in a cold bath for 20 minutes after workout. Like what's your
idea of heat and ice would be, you know, optimum to, you know, if you can get 210 degree room, maybe a 125 steam, 120 to 125 steam. And then an ice tub, something that's, you know, below, you know, in the upper to mid 30s. If you could get it to be 32, that would be great. And then do rounds of heat and ice. And
how normally, long do you do that?
Normally
heat and
about
how long the
3 to 5 minutes minimum on the ice and then 15 minutes in the heat, or just until you're really uncomfortable.
What is the contraption you have here in Kauai in your garage, that plastic?
Well, that's iCool. That's an iCool product. That was a gift from Pat Riley. So the coach, Pat Riley.
And you keep that next to the sauna, this iCool device,
yeah.
And it makes a cold bath without you having to drag ice
That's right. I mean, in Malibu, my optimum setup is a stainless steel tub and a commercial grade ice machine, which talk about a luxury. This is a luxury, right? So, a restaurant ice machine next to a stainless steel tub, unload the entire bin, half water, half ice. That's the king. But iCool is, puts it in the 40 degree and I can add a couple bags of ice to get it down in the 30s.
Now, are you working out? Like, are you doing heat, cold workout and mixing in those components to an actual exercise routine? Mm-hmm.
In the summertime, we implement the heat and the ice within a routine. So we may, sit in the ice for 5 minutes and then go in and do a circuit and then go lift and then go back in the ice and then go back in the heat and then maybe do some kind of water drill or some other swimming, breath holding, and then just kind of intermittently put ourselves in these different environments as we're training. So it's like, I have a very short attention span and get bored very easily. So I'm always looking for variation.
So you're bouncing from heat to cold to exercise to hypoxia all during one big workout.
Absolutely. And in the optimum scenario now, this time of year, I'm getting the workout in the ocean. And so I'm using it more as a recovery tool. Okay. Or Sunday comes and we just do a recovery day and you do 5-6 rounds of this heat and ice and you're good. You can lay down and feel like you did something, even though you didn't really move, but you flushed your system and expanded and contracted and you just feel clean when you're done. Yeah. You feel like your body's been purged.
Have you published online or elsewhere examples of workouts that you do? Like if people wanted to dig in and see what a sample session would look like.
Well, we're in the process of really doing a very more professional job. We've had, bits of these things, and I do a column for Men's Journal that, we expose some workouts and little pieces here and there, but nothing really comprehensively like we're doing right now with XPT. Mm-hmm. So we have this program called XPT, which will really be a more comprehensive look at what would be a complete workout. And, we always seem to isolate working out into this, into one compartment. We go, okay, working out, but it's lifestyle, right? It's how you eat, how you sleep.
It's not exercise on a pill.
You can say, hey, I'm working out great and everything, but you're staying up till 2 a.m. every night. Mm-hmm. And then you're eating like crap. I go, don't even talk to me about your workout, because at that point, it's a mute point. You're only undermining your health, really.
Yeah.
And so, looking at everything more comprehensively, whether you're doing eye training stuff as well, like I've been doing a lot of eye drills that I find really are performance enhancing, because everything, all of the information that we 85% of the information we receive is through our eyes. And so your eye strength and the relationship you have.
What's your app called? Glasses Off?
Yeah, Glasses
Off. Called Glasses Off.
Glasses Off. People.
And for those of you listening, by the way, if you go to bengreenfieldfitness.com/laird, sorry, Gabby.
That's okay.
bengreenfieldfitness.com/LAIRD. I'll put some notes for you there in the show notes for some of these things that we're talking about. That's really interesting on the eye method. It's called Glasses Off.
Incredible.
They'll learn what a Gabor is.
Yeah.
So, Gabby, myself and my friend Dustin Mayer and my wife dropped into your class on Wednesday morning, and you finished up this jailhouse-style circuit with 60 people in a warehouse sweating and bumping and grinding and lifting dumbbells with a special kind of breath work. Can you tell me about what that was and why you utilize something like that and how you practice that breath work?
Well, one of the many great things about me being married to Laird is it's like you're in a think tank all the time. And so our friend Rick Rubin introduced Laird maybe about 2.5-3 years ago to a book called Becoming the Iceman by Wim Hof.
Mm-hmm.
And Laird, who, we're very different. Laird, I always say, is a much more of a creative type of athlete, and it's an artistry. And I have a linear sort of quality. I mean, even look at my workout that I created, like it's just, it's on time. It's all these things. Right. So Laird diligently started embracing this breathing. And I was like, you know, I have a friend who teaches yoga and she says, you stretch because you think it'll make you more functional. I stretch because it makes me feel good.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And right. So I'm always like, what's the end game? And Laird was doing it. And then of course, last summer he says, oh, Wim Hof's coming over, staying with us for a couple of days. I go, yeah, of course he is. So Wim came over and also taught everyone just how to do the breathing, this style of breathing a little bit more. And then I started getting involved and Laird taught me further how to do it. And so, you know, when you talked about things that we learn as we get older, I think that we've done a lot of right things. And I think I've done a lot of right things, but I think one of the areas that I sort of really neglected was stretching,
mm-hmm.
which at the end of the day, stretching probably oxygenates your system.
Mm-hmm.
And so for me, the Wim Hof method, I could put my mind around it. There's a meditative quality to it, which is what I'm always suggesting to people, like actively meditate, find the way to be still. So, you know, all these things. So at the end of the workout, all I'm trying to do is introduce the class to this idea so that if they want to expand on it, they can, and I don't have that much time with them. So it's this Wim Hof breathing just to give them a taste. And then Laird came a few weeks ago, taught them for an hour. And then Wim Hof is actually going to come. And what we're doing is we're going to open it up to the community for them to spend an hour breathing with him mm-hmm. actually next week. So for me, it's sort of, you know, I feel like as a responsibility, if I'm running the class, when I know a little bit of this and a little bit of that and I can share it with them, I just try to incorporate it, but I have only so much time.
This week, every morning since I've been in Kauai, because my friend who I'm staying with, his girlfriend is a Kundalini yoga instructor. And we've been going through these chakras where we do this deep, rapid breathing, right? Until you're light in the head mm-hmm. for 90 seconds, and then you stop and you hold. And your entire body feels warm and hyperoxygenated and even a little bit tingly and dizzy. And is this pretty similar to the type of breath work that you guys are doing?
Absolutely.
This Kundalini yeah. style?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I think Wim, what I liked is that I think he learned a lot of different disciplines of it. And then he created something that was very applicable. Because sometimes mm-hmm. when you look at some of this breathing, it's a little bit like certain forms and disciplines within stretching, where it's like this a little bit ambiguous,
mm-hmm.
where you kind of are like, you know, it's hard for you, you know, it's forms of meditation where you're kind of like, are you there or you're not there? Or is this working? Am I doing it right? Am I not? And Wim's approach is a little bit like, I don't really care what hole you breathe through. Just the whole idea is to saturate the system with oxygen and then deplete the system any way, you know, and it doesn't have to be pretty. And so I like that, you know, I liked that approach. And, but yeah, I think, I mean, there's, you know, we have a saying in at least in innovation or in that world of ideas, which is, you know, there's nothing new. It's just a new application of an old idea. And so, mm-hmm. you know, you're never going to come up with something that hasn't been either thought of or done in some form. It's just, you know, hybrids and maybe ways that somebody created a technique that was really applicable, you know, that it was, you yeah. could just implement it. And it was like,
plus he's a great messenger. He
yeah.
does all these incredible feats.
Yeah. Wim's been on the show a couple of times.
So you know that.
Yeah.
And you know what? There's an innocence to me about Wim and his genuine enthusiasm.
Mm.
And that's what I'm interested in too. Like I, whatever things I'm involved with, we just want it to be sort of a very open, inclusive feeling. Anybody has yeah. the answers.
Not
None
a
of us
magic
have the
trick.
Answers.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it is a puzzle. It takes all the pieces. It's not one.
Mm-hmm.
And so Wim also inspires me that way because I feel he has a real sincere.
Yeah. When he lives it too, you know, he lives it. It's like, you know, Polchek talks about, you know, when you go see a physician, you should have him, he should work on you with the least amount of clothes as possible. So you can see
right.
how his work's working on him.
Right.
Because at the end of the day, it's like if Wim lives his work, right? So he does things with his work. You can see it. It's not like he's going, yeah, do this breathing, and then he's over
it's
there.
It's one of the issues in the health and fitness industry, you know, overweight bloggers in their mom's basement writing about diets and workouts.
Exactly.
Yeah. Now, related to this Wim Hof breathwork technique, tell me about this idea behind working out underwater. Do you both do that?
The pool training, yeah, we've been doing that for about 8 years, pretty intensely. It started out sort
that
of,
came separately too. Yeah. That has nothing to do with the breathing.
And
by
we
the
want
way. That
and we never want to over. And it's really important too that we don't want to encourage. Like the breathing is sort of for the land.
Mm-hmm. So proceed at your own risk if someone's listening right now.
Yeah, because it's something you know you can't encourage people to do. And the pool training is
well,
something
we never do things where in the pool where we're trying to see how long we can hold our breath.
No.
That's not what we do. That's not our...
That's not the goal.
And you're not combining exertion with hypoxia to the extreme.
No, not really. I mean, Laird does do things that are a little bit more exaggerated, but Laird's also been doing certain things a lot longer. And some of the drills sort of take all the air that you have, but the intention going in is never, okay, I'm going to go hold my breath as long as you can. It's either reps or it's trying to get there as quickly and back as you can.
Now, what would that look like?
The workload. The workload overrides.
There's so many. So in the deep end, you can do things, just to give you a small example, ballistic movements with no impact on your joints. So, for example, you can take one dumbbell. Let's say Laird, he holds a 45-pound dumbbell, tucks it into his stomach, squat, jumps to the top, takes the free hand, pulls himself up, one breath in. On the way down, as soon as you break the surface, start to let go of your air. Switch
pulls
hands.
Himself up by holding onto the ledge of the pool.
No, not
hands
at all.
Up or just
stroking.
Just and then the head
stroke
out.
Up through the water.
Stroke
so you're
up.
Doing this ballistic move with resistance.
Like a weighted underwater squat jump.
Correct.
Yeah.
And then you switch hands. You can do ones where you have super lightweight. You double. You squat jump, then take two really light dumbbells. Open your arms in a windmill circle, pull down, one breath in, come down. So you can do deep water. There's a lot of things that have been created in deep water, or there's things that we do in 3 feet of water.
I mean, ultimately, the original concept stemmed from Hawaiian rock training, which was to grab a boulder and run along the bottom as far as you can. Now, when we started,
you grab a boulder, you're at the beach, and you go out into the water holding a boulder. You find a boulder and you just run underwater
as far as you can. Then you swim to the surface. Your buddy who's on the surface swims down, grabs the boulder. He runs as far as he can. Then, meanwhile, you're swimming on the surface. He comes up. You run down. You go. So that's where it started originally, the concept, because that's we grew up knowing about this training and did this stuff when we were kids, but. I wanted to make something that wasn't so directly related to just how long could you hold your breath, because when you do that style of breath hold training, you're finished in 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I have a theory, but I believe that there's only so much available oxygen in the system, and I don't care how you breathe after. Once the reservoirs are completely diminished, you might need the rest of the day to recover. And so you can either explode all of that reservoir in 5 minutes, like you would powerlifting as much as you could. How many would you do? Versus doing lighter reps for a longer period of time. So now when you breathe and get a breath between reps, now you can sustain and stretch that workload over a longer period of time. And there's, we have 30 different exercises that
least.
We do that I can make basketball players jump higher.
Mm-hmm.
I can make swimmers swim faster. I can make tennis players hit hard. I mean, you can, because that environment, first of all, the pressurization on the body is like wearing compression wear, which your blood will flow through your lymphatic system like 20 times faster than it would in the air. So the turnover of the blood through
if
the system.
If you're in the water below your neck for an hour, you can...
circulate the blood through your lymphatic system, which normally takes 24 hours. So in 1 hour, that's why you have such a feeling when you get out of the water. Like people would always go swimming when they had hangovers, and like you get this rejuvenation from the pressurization. So that's just one little side effect.
And then you're supported. He does all these big stretching and lifting. And again, you can be explosive. If I'm a professional athlete, like a basketball player, and I'm playing on a hard surface, and I'm jumping, banging. Here's an opportunity to either improve my performance without beating myself up. Because I already have to do that in my season.
The last thing you need to do as a basketball player is go jump
on your
time off.
Right.
If anything, you shouldn't be jumping, because you're going to jump more during the season than you probably should jump in your life. So go to an environment where you're protected, where you can hammer it, jump as hard as you can, and have zero, because no gravity. So you have no
impact. And you're in an element. Which then that begs to the conversation where we're talking about lifestyle. So I'm not going to say outside, because some people might be in a pool inside, but you're in an element. You're in water.
Yeah.
And you will do this with other people. This is not training to do alone.
Yeah.
So then there's the community aspect. The pool training is pretty amazing.
It is. It's the most amazing thing that we've done, and I don't mean to block you, but I get excited about it because of it's the most – passionate training that I have. Yeah. But when I really look at it, if you said define it in, you know, in a couple of words, define pool training, I would define it ultimately as breathing rhythms.
Yeah.
That really it's about breathing, the pool is, because you can't breathe when you're under and you can only breathe when you're up. And so if you're in these, you know, pendulum up and down movements, it's no breath, breathe, no breath, breathe. And a lot of times we're exhaling underwater and inhaling at the surface. And so we get in these very nice rhythms that offer a meditative, an active meditative sensation.
It's a concept called vagal nerve tone. Mm-hmm. When you activate this mammalian dive reflex. Mm-hmm. And do either of you use heart rate variability measurements at all?
We have talked with Paul about it before. I mean, you use it. I'd love to do it more because I'm interested in it.
I don't do a lot of quantification, but it's one of the few things that I do. Really? And the idea is that by training your vagal nerve through singing, through gargling, through breath holding, through cold water immersion, you can see this score increase. You see your stress resilience increase every day.
What is it? I mean, explain exactly.
I know what it is.
It's that gap between the beats, right?
It's the delta, the difference in the period of time between heartbeats, which if there's slight variations in that, it shows good interplay between your sympathetic and your parasympathetic nervous system. And your
fatigue level, and it tells you all a bunch of cool stuff.
Yeah, the first time I ever tried one of these workouts that you're talking about, I was with Neil Strauss up at a 25-meter pool.
Yeah.
And he was explaining to me this workout. We were just putting dumbbells between our feet, right? Yeah. And going back and forth with the feet elevated above the water. And it's
Neil,
quite
the writer.
Yeah, the author.
Yeah, Neil the author.
Oh, you mean the one? Oh, well, okay, now I get it. I'm like,
Neil the author.
Uh-huh. Did Neil ever tell you, I don't want to get way late, but that he became a Frisbee player to go to North Korea? You know the whole story?
Was this a recent development?
No, it was a couple years ago. We can talk about it another time.
All right.
But, okay, I want to say one other thing that's interesting.
He posed as a professional Frisbee player to infiltrate, you know, and to do a story.
He's one of the most amazing immersive journalists.
Oh, I no kidding. You have to ask him about his going to North Korea.
Yeah, well, I've read about his sexual escapades in his
recent
book.
And now he has the new one.
Yeah.
But one of the other interesting things about the pool training is there's a couple things. So, for example, sometimes you'll come up for air and you'll think, I would like more air. But the amount of air it's going to take me to keep myself above water is not worth the amount of air I'm actually going to get.
Mm.
So it's sort of true to life where there's sort of things that go on where you have to go in a way this discomfort I'm feeling is going to be, it's better, and it's better to live with it than what I would need to do to try to get a different feeling.
It's not
feeling.
Worth it.
It isn't worth it. And there's a really interesting thing. And the other thing it teaches you too is how to function in that discomfort. You'll be under the water. You're finishing a task. You genuinely feel like you're just about out of air. And then you come to a place where you kind of go, I'm going to be okay. And I'll have enough air.
Well, and it's interesting you talk about that, but there's certain people that the pool grabs.
Yeah.
Like, and if you have any kind of, if you're trying to subject things to aggression. Mm-hmm. Like if you're a trainer or a fighters, that's those guys usually have the most problem with the pool.
Yeah.
Like the eyes go big and they feel like this vulnerability, which I think is an incredible thing for people to overcome.
Yeah.
Like it's a transformation.
And
I've seen the transformations.
It's just like a cold shower. If your sympathetic nervous system is overactive.
That's right.
It's such a beautiful thing in life, because for me, training, yes, I want to feel good and I want to look good. But if also I can learn other things that give me these tools to function in life and be married and deal with a stranger cutting me off in the road or my children, for me, that's what training is also about.
Right. Stress resilience. Yeah. Laird, you have an interesting morning routine. When we came in to visit you, you were making coffee. Can you share your coffee recipe?
Yeah. So it changes depending on my, if the ingredients are available or not. But and the optimum scenario is usually raw butter and coconut oil, red palm oil, and a few other little.
Now, why red palm oil? That's something you don't hear people talk about a lot.
You know, I somehow came across it and I really liked. I crave it, and they talk about that it's supposed to have, you know, like 1,000 times the beta carotene of a carrot and a bunch of other minerals in it. And so I really was attracted to the flavor of it. But then I started to learn that it had a lot of good stuff in it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, sometimes I think we underestimate our relationship with the flavor of things and what the value is that sometimes these cravings are things we really like, as long as it's not, you know, a chocolate cake or something Dr. like Pepper. That. There's a line there. There's a line right between your flavor really telling you. And so telling, you know, you, it's a craving because it's got sugar in it, or it's actually something your body wants. And
right.
So this raw butter, coconut oil, and then of course a really high quality, a high quality bean. Mm-hmm. Because it starts with the coffee.
And you use an immersion blender and you do coconut oil, butter, and red palm oil.
Red palm oil. And I have that exact formula like in a
in the oil.
You can buy that
the top fuel.
The top fuel.
Because the powder doesn't have the
What do you mean palm. The top fuel?
So Laird has a creamer business.
Really?
And yeah.
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 Learning all sorts of interesting things.
Okay, yeah. We'll send you
to that. Add to the show notes.
Yeah. And so the top fuel is
it's LairdSuperfood.com. LairdSuperfood.com has you can buy probably the highest quality bean that you can buy without going in.
And so you can get each of these components, the butter, the red palm, the coconut.
High altitude, low acidic bean.
The three of them
it's
are
all
in
it's
one.
How does that work? It ships to your house all in one?
Yeah, they're in like a mayonnaise little container, the oil, because they're a hot mess if you try to put them in
then
a
you
jar.
Just dump that into like a blender with a cup of coffee?
Or your immersion.
Or even if you have to and you're desperate and you're on the road, you can put in some junk airplane coffee or crap, whatever. It can take a terrible cup of coffee and turn it into something that will give you energy and affect you in a way that...
And then he has a powder
that's...
I think the powder is dynamic in a different way because it's coconut oil and powder, but also what they added was aquamin calcium because coffee can shift your ability to absorb calcium. So it's a cold water calcium.
Interesting. So you add calcium in.
And they also added cordyceps mushrooms to support your immune system. So in the powder formulation, they've put these in there in that consideration. So what Laird and the company's trying to offer is, this is something people do every day. And so can you do it a little bit healthier? And it tastes really good. And there's a performance element to it.
For sure.
And if you want the hardcore, you just get his top fuel.
Use top fuel. But the aquamine actually has 72 minerals in it too. Yeah. It's this aquamine is an algae, a calcified algae that sinks to the bottom of the ocean, and they scrape it off in Iceland. They mine it off the bottom of the seafloor. So it's completely sustainable and doesn't do any environmental damage, but it's probably one of the best sources of calcium. The calcium that you get from it, you absorb like 75% or 80% of it, which most calciums you absorb hardly any of it.
So that's fascinating. I get random boxes of supplements shipped to my house every week full of different flavors of beef jerky and random exogenous ketones. I'd never heard of this blend of calcium, coffee, red palm, coconut, and butter.
But, for me, I look at it as like an opportunity, and this is authentic. Things that I want to be involved in things that are authentic to me. And that I use. Yeah. So it's authentic. Yeah. I make it. I want to turn it on to my friends. I want to have everybody try it. And so the best way to do that is make a product that people can get to use.
Yeah.
But it's also an opportunity to get people who aren't getting enough nutrients in their life to put some cool stuff in coffee, because everybody drinks coffee. And all of a sudden, it's like sneaking, I don't drink smoothies, but everybody has a cup of coffee. If you can put some stuff that's good for their brain and good for their body in their cup of coffee, then that's maybe one way, because I think you have to approach people where they are. And so if you don't, if I come out with some formula that only you and me eat, that doesn't do anybody any good. And there's a lot of those out there. There's a lot of these really specialized stuff that, it takes a certain ability to eat, raw butter and, melted in a cup and drink it. I mean,
was that stuff you used to eat that smelled like formaldehyde? That's a really interesting name.
Butyric acid?
No, he has like those mushrooms, like the shilajits.
Oh, shilajit.
Oh,
yeah. It smells like
Have you ever seen that?
Bandages.
No.
Oh, it's
shilajit.
Shilajit.
It's a lichen. It's a lichen from 20,000
like a like a moss.
Feet.
Yeah. Yeah. Laird would eat the shilajit and moss. I would just go,
interesting.
No, but I'm good. See, I grew up in Hawaii.
You sound like me. I'll try anything. Yeah, I'll try anything perfect. Once. I actually
he'll
just
do it though. He'll actually do it. Yeah. Like he'll do it as a habit. Like a shilling. Yeah.
You know, speaking of habits, we don't like to let a podcast go by without at least talking a little bit about bowel and poop.
Oh, yeah.
Laird, you have a special trick that you use to induce a morning bowel movement. Tell me about this.
Well, listen, honestly, I never have had a problem with movement, and it's never – but and because I've done some pretty intense colon cleanses, like some serious, you know, 10-day eat soft food –
yeah, but what are you doing?
Use a Kalima board and all that stuff. Like, but I'm just saying, I'm leading up to the experience.
You do that just for general health.
Yeah.
These type of colonic cleanses.
Yeah, I've done it twice. I've done two weeks of eating soft food every single day, somewhere between 5 to 10 to 15 gallons of water.
I was never as lean as when I did those.
Yeah, exactly. But this latest kind of trend that I'm on is with baking soda. I use a heaping teaspoon of baking soda in a glass of water in the morning on an empty stomach, and within 10 or 15 minutes, especially if you walk around, you might have already had a movement. You're going to have another
just blows you right out
more, and it's going and you know, I feel I have an addiction to it, because believe me, drinking baking soda in water is not the most pleasant thing. Like, when you drink it, you're just kind of like, why would I do this? But the reaction that my body has after I purge I like it. I go
not to be like, done before you hop in the car to go to work.
No,
my wife actually
wake
gives
up
me
early first thing, but you do it on an empty stomach. So if you get up right away and do it, you're within that first half an hour. If you're not waking up and getting in your car within a half an hour, you got time.
Very alkalizing too. Gavin, you're laughing. Do you do any of these? Because my wife gives me a hard time, right? Like, for example, just to stay on this topic, like, I like to get up in the morning and just get it all out at once. Right?
Okay.
So I'll go in the bathroom for 15, 20 minutes and she laughs at me because I'm just in there, you know, Facebooking, and then I'm done. I'm done for the day. Sometimes I'll use the baking soda trick, sometimes the lemon juice, but do you laugh at a lot of Laird's little habits, or do you incorporate a lot of these yourself?
I do some of them. I've done the baking powder, but I haven't committed to it the way Laird has. You know, I've been with Laird for 20 years, so I've seen a lot of stuff. I'm usually in awe. Mm-hmm. For example, when we lived here in the 90s, Laird would keep noni. Mm-hmm. Real noni. I don't know if you've ever seen real noni.
I picked noni when I was out on a hike the other day, and I left it in my backpack, and I realized. Basically, I just about had to throw my backpack away.
And you keep it in a jar, and you add water, and then you do a shot.
It's the most hideously smelling fruit.
Oh, yeah. Like, well, it smells exactly like bile.
Dirty socks.
It's disgusting. Bile, like, so he would, when we first were together, he'd take a shot every day and then refill it up with water, and it's really good. It's a blood purifier. Mm-hmm. I mean, the list is long. So I'm used to it, but also I have to be honest, and your wife would probably admit the same thing. There's a part of me that secretly I'm so glad, because I know it's being a positive influence on me, but I may not be taking the full direct hit. Like some of it, sometimes I feel like maybe I'm getting some of this vicariously and I don't actually have to do it. But if nothing else too, it's again within your four walls to have somebody who's willing to try new things and do things, and it's uncomfortable, but they still do it. Is ultimately good for the other person.
Yeah. Now you are friends with Don Wildman. I first learned about him in an Esquire magazine article a few years ago, in which they wrote about the world's hardest workout. And there was this 70-some-year-old man doing this workout like three times a week. And then I learned that the other day that he's a friend of yours, Laird.
Yes.
And I'm curious. Looking at him, what you've learned from a guy like Don Wildman, what you've learned about yourself being an athlete and moving forward in age, what would you say are the most valuable things that one can do to stay young?
Well, that's a magic question, right? It's the what is the fountain of youth? And, you know, we think a lot about it, but when I look at anybody that I look up to in that arena, and Wildman is the king. He's at the top of the heap. And retain your youthful enthusiasm. I mean, I think to be enthusiastic about things. I mean, okay, then there's the list after, which is, you know, the discipline and keep driving the car. You know, a car moving doesn't break. You know, when you park them, they break. It's like, so, but there's that enthusiasm and when I look at other guys that have a similar style that Don has, it's just, and they're relentless. Yeah. So it's enthusiastic and relentless. And it's like if Don's got a broken leg, he's on a stationary bike with a cat with a crutch on the other pedal, and he's riding it with a crutch on one side and a good leg on the other side.
He's not just watching TV waiting for things to heal.
No.
Yeah.
He's going full bore. Yeah. And he I mean, double knee replacements, and, you know, 3 months later, he's in the senior games. I mean, the guy doesn't like...
Don does what Don likes. And this is important, too, because Don has figured out what works for him.
Yeah.
And that's what he's doing.
Yeah, exactly. No, exactly.
He's open to new things. It's not that.
Yeah.
But it's kind of like, no, this is my thing. Like, you know, Laird is different than him. Like, Laird is really believes in stretching and all this stuff. And Don will rather ride his bike and burn calories.
And also, Don has found an arena, the bike, where he has equality. So Don at 83 can...
Like a road bicycle or mountain bike?
Any bike.
Whatever one.
Really?
And whatever, wherever, whatever. You can take somebody who's a young stud...
Mm-hmm.
And Don will go out and he'll hammer him. And and so at that point, there's true equality, right? Because it's 80, 30, you know, it does it 30 and 80. And all of a sudden, the 80's gone. And you're like, well, who's... And the most technical, single track, loose ground, road bike, you know, in a tuck. I mean, so he's found a spot where he has equality. And I think that's something that's important too. And I think there's 1,000 ways to do that. But as you get older, for you to feel like you're not losing ground is important. And, you know, again, the psychology of all this is that, you know, I could probably do all this stuff that I think is so great for my health and still just croak from, you know, it wouldn't matter. Right. And I could have somebody, I could live another way and do whatever I wanted and live.
The guy who's smoking cigarettes and not doing baking soda might live to be 110.
Jack O'Lane's brother supposedly was nine years older and he lived 10 years longer than he did or whatever and never did anything, right? So it's like, or the guy told me the story about the martial artist who could go down and put his elbows on his feet and they were so impressed by that. And then his brother showed up, the martial artist brother showed up who smoked cigarettes and drank every day. And they said, yeah, we're so amazed by your brother. He could put his elbows on his feet. So that guy came and put his elbow on his feet. So it's, you know, it's like there's, so a lot of it's the psychology of what it brings you. I think because again, you're left with your own thoughts always. And so how does it make you feel? Do you feel like you're equal? Does it make you feel fulfilled when you know, Don goes out and rides 40 miles. When he comes back, he feels good. And for him, a lot of it's calorie earning. He just wants to earn his calories because he's worried about not burning enough to because he loves to eat. So his whole thing
trains
is like
to eat, eating to
related. It's eating related. Yeah. It's burned calories. Hey, listen, I can go right now. I can have ice cream. I can eat whatever I want because I've burned. And he's counting them all.
Really?
He's got counters.
They're very different that way.
Oh yeah, he's counting every calorie. Yeah. Counting the heart.
I have to admit, I think about that. I don't quantify, but I think about that sometimes. You know?
Yeah.
How many calories have I burned today? Yeah. Can I have the extra 1,000 calories?
No, but that's what he does. And the other thing I think that he does is he doesn't hang around people that are like, oh, I'm tired and oh, this hurts and this. He hangs around people that it's like, hey, you want to go do this? You want to go do that?
Yeah.
And I think that's very helpful because...
Well, you are the company you keep.
Yeah.
So if you're hanging out with a bunch of guys who just don't want to do anything, it's like, you know, he's around younger people all the time.
Yeah.
And it's always about guys that are... And people that come to him, when they come to him, they know it's a bike, it's a workout, it's something. We're going snowboarding in a helicopter. I mean, we're going to be doing. So you don't even go see him if you're not feeling like you're up for it. You go with
relentless pursuit. I see that in you, Laird. You know, you in your garage with all these toys and you know, you invented the paddle board and now you've got this hydrofoil and there's all these contraptions. Is that part of what's keeping you young, like a relentless pursuit of creating things?
For sure. I mean, that's part of that's the never ending, you know, there's a saying, right? The anonymous stuntman, you know, you never let your memories be bigger than your dreams. You know, it's like, and I think that if you're dreaming, then you have hopes, right? So if you, and so in a way, whatever you have to do to keep that rolling, I mean, that's, you know, you want to talk about, again, you know, retaining your youthful enthusiasm is part of that system, right? It's part of the system of you're enthusiastic, you're trying new stuff, and it's like being creative. And that's really, for a male, you know, I say because, you know, we can't make babies, so we need to make stuff like us. Like we have to build buildings or we got to make stuff or we got to do stuff to make up for the fact that we don't get to produce life.
Right? We can participate. Help. We can help.
No, we start yeah. the we start get, we the get fire. The fun part. We yeah. start the fire, but we don't get to sit back yeah. and go, "Wow, look what came yeah. out of me." Yeah. And so we're
moms
we're,
don't do that. I just want you.
I know, but it's,
we don't
but
sit
it's,
back. Sometimes you go, "Whoa, that
yeah,
came out."
Yeah.
But we don't sit back and go.
No, but you. But there. But I'm just saying that yes, as a male position, we have a certain, you know, the hunt, the pursuit, the feeling of accomplishment. All of that stuff is tied into, you know, you have to figure out what way you get that. Like, how do I, what brings me that feeling of accomplishment?
And Don stays connected.
Yeah.
He's
yeah.
social.
Yeah. You're both doing a lot in terms of creating, in terms of business. And Gabby, I know, you know, we were talking before we started recording about a new TV show that you're helping to, you are the voice of or the face
the host,
of.
Yeah.
Yeah, this show on NBC called Strong. Mm-hmm. And I'm curious, when you look at your children, are you trying to build some kind of a business that your children will run? Are you just kind of like having fun and taking opportunities as they come at you and letting what comes and just basically having fun with life? Or, you know, is there a plan with what you're doing, or are you guys just living life and letting adventures come your way?
I think it's a combination. I think it would be foolhardy to be to or dishonest to say, oh, we're just totally winging it, you know, because mm-hmm. I think first of all, you know, my hope is, and I have thought about this, oh, maybe we can create things that the girls can then take over. But then part of me goes, well, I don't want that, because that's not their vision, their voice, and their path. So there's a part of you that actually doesn't want that, because you want each child to sort of forge their own new path that represents them, not, oh, I work in my parents' business. So there's that part of it.
We'll find their special purpose. Now, if their
yeah.
thing happens to be that,
yeah.
that they're into being
sure.
involved in what's going on, but that's, I don't know. I think that's a dangerous setup when you know, for me, I feel like these things are more of, these are a reflection of your achievements. So mm-hmm. when you look at this, if you can create, you know, successful businesses and these other pieces, this is just a reflection of how well of a job you've done at doing the other parts. Mm-hmm. Like, you look back and you go, well, you did that, which allowed you to do this, and how well you did that will dictate how well, you know, these mm-hmm. other things do, I would think.
But the hope is for everything to be as genuine. You know, like if Laird has his apparel that he wears, the shorts, if I make a supplement company, I take the supplements. If I do Strong, I genuinely admire yeah, yeah. the concept. So really, and to be honest, and I'm sure you can relate to this, that can be a lot harder.
It's a lot harder to spend time in the trenches, figuring out what works and what doesn't.
Yeah, and we've done part of that work, because we are older, as you stated earlier. I'm just kidding.
Just trying to figure out the most political way
to
phrase
we're
that.
We're fine with that.
Well, yeah.
with that. But I'm saying we've been yeah. around
right.
a little, where you just start going, but there are days, and I struggle with it more than Larry, because I'm more detail and sort of dealing with things on a one other level. Like, I see every email, and I see every sort of some of these other details. But that the hope is that you can create a real business based on something authentically that you've done. And so that is our hope. So that part is not the accident, but it's kind of like Laird surfing or me playing volleyball or doing other things. It was never the intention. You did it because you loved it.
Yeah.
And then you arrived at a place that then you were making choices.
Yeah.
And you have to, and listen, it takes a certain amount of faith too, because you have to also, you know, you got to believe too. You got to believe that you can.
Yeah.
I mean, you can say, hey, I have this plan
mm-hmm.
and I'm going to, and this is what I want to do, but you also have to believe that you can.
Yeah.
And you also
yeah.
have, and it's harder to walk the line too. Like, for, I can say that I've turned down a lot of opportunities throughout my career because they weren't authentic. Like,
yeah.
I just don't eat that.
Right.
I don't drink that. I don't wear that.
Yeah.
I don't do, I did.
No matter how much money is being.
Yeah.
No matter what it
does. Because
yeah.
you have to
does,
live with yourself.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
and I think, you know, Laird always says this to me, because I worry more than Laird. Laird does have sort of is better at that. But he'll say, you know, Gabby, it's all going to be fine. And then he always says, and it is fine. And I
yeah.
think sometimes, like, if someone is listening to this and they're starting a new business, or they sort of have a job they don't like and they really want to try something, I think it's also doing things intelligently, right? It's even like Laird surfing or whatever. You don't huck yourself into anything,
mm-hmm.
right? So it's doing it, but It's understanding your reasons why. Can you stand by those reasons? Do you believe in that? Are you willing to work your ass off when there's no return because you believe in it? And I think if people feel that way, then that is where faith comes in, and believe that it is kind of a formula that works. Now, having said that, we've had businesses that we joke, you know, you start four, and if you're really lucky, one bangs it hard, one kind of shovels along, and two will probably disappear. So I think it's you know, it's calibrating all those parts of the formula. But I believe that you, to be a dreamer is important, but I also think you always go with your eyes open.
Yeah.
During it.
Yeah, well, and Gabby's, you know, it's like Gabby's great to bring, you know, to be realistic. It's like, you know, we tell our kids, hey, you're not going to be gymnasts.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah. He's going to be 6'4".
You're not going to be 6'5" gymnast.
You're not going to be a 6'5" gymnast. It's not going to happen. So you also have to be realistic about what you, where you're going. It's like, you know, I mean, there's exceptions to every rule, but at a certain point, you know, you can't go off and embark off on a road that you just have no experience and no skill at and no potential skill at. Like that would be not, that would be an unrealistic approach to any project. So you kind of have to go, hey, I'm good at kind of good at these things, so let's you know,
and that's
first you have to figure out what you're good at. That's why, you know, I think for the kids, my number one thing for them is, and I always quote the movie The Jerk, but it's like, find your special purpose. Like find the thing that you love, that you're good at, and because at the end you will find a way to make a living from that somehow. And I said, even if you could, I told them, even if you can balance a chair on your head, believe me, if you're good enough at it, there's a place that'll pay you, and you can go do it every day, and you can make money from it. So
that's what I tell my kids is there's three things that I encourage them to have in their life for happiness and longevity: love, relationships, family, passion. It doesn't mean that you have to necessarily follow your passion in terms of designing a lifestyle around, you know, say whatever, surfing or volleyball or whatever the case may be, but you must have a passion for the work that you're involved with. And then you must believe in some kind of a greater story for your life. You know, we're not just all pieces of flesh and meat, you know, hurtling through the universe.
Yeah. Well, and I think it's the idea too, right? Like when you give the idea to kids that you can contribute just a little bit, I think that that's a really powerful thing for a person to feel like, I can make a difference, even if it means within my home, within my block, within my neighborhood, my community. That idea, we try to let the girls get the idea too, that work and service live together.
Mm-hmm.
That there is an idea of service and things.
We have a responsibility.
Because that makes you feel good. At the end, even if you selfishly do it to make yourself feel good.
Yeah, the selfish act of giving.
I think it's really important. It's an important thing because you can get everything for yourself. Attention, money, everything. But if you don't have the other and the things that you're discussing,
oh, you'll be unhappy.
It's a never-ending,
never-ending treadmill. But you know, and that gets back if we can build these businesses and build these brands and make and get into the position to really make a difference. So first of all, you can, when you leave the planet, how big a footprint can you leave? Can you leave just a big, you know? Can you leave a big old, you know, a big impression on the earth, and you leave and it still goes. But also while you're here, can you really get yourself in a position to make a difference? Right. Mm-hmm. And so first it starts in your yard, and then it starts in the neighborhood, and then it starts in the town, and then eventually it grows from there. But can you, what you know, and unfortunately we live in a monetary world. So if you get in a position that you have the ability to make a difference, you can give and help and do things when you have a successful company better than you can almost doing anything else.
Yeah. Well, you guys are certainly making a difference. And if you're listening in right now and you want to learn more about what Laird and Gabby are doing, you can go to bengreenfieldfitness.com/Laird, bengreenfieldfitness.com/LAIRD. And I will link to everything from, I suppose, Arm & Hammer baking soda to the No Glasses app to Laird's website and Gabby's TV show and everything that Laird and Gabby are involved with. And you can just go to bengreenfieldfitness.com/Laird to check that out. Laird, Gabby, thanks for coming on the show.
Yeah, well, if you were in our neighborhood.
It's been our pleasure. We've enjoyed,
beautiful neighborhood.
We've enjoyed meeting you and spending time.
Thanks.
You've been listening to the Ben Greenfield Fitness Podcast. Go to BenGreenfieldFitness.com for even more cutting-edge fitness and performance advice.